Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's July 3rd, 2012. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, joined tonight by an impressive group. Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger, Brian Strumke from Stillwater Artisanal, and Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Feeling good. We're feeling the fourth.
Well, this is an impressive group, and we'll give a shout-out to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. Check them out. Learn more about beer, GreatBrewers.com. And we're supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 40 New York City beer bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. And they're bringing to you a July Good Beer Month, which you'll learn a lot more about on our show coming up. All right, so Brian Strumke and Garrett Oliver, two very interesting people.
Yes,
Jen, what do you think makes them so interesting as brewers and as personalities?
I love all the personalities in this industry because they're so far-reaching. You can have such amazing, diverse conversations with all these guys about a lot of things that go far beyond beer. But it all comes back to beer that brings us together. And these two characters are two of the greatest we have out here in the East, definitely. So
Brian, you've
Brian,
been on the
Brian
show
we're characters.
I mean, are you going to argue? Come on.
No, I'm not going to argue.
I mean, these guys, you don't mistake either one of them for anybody else in the industry or otherwise. And they're both also making really great beers that have a lot of personality, and they have a lot to.
So, Garrett, you really set a standard by you've been doing collaborations with other breweries in other countries for many years. How did that get started? Because I know Brian's been doing similar things.
Well, my background in brewing comes out of, you know, the time when I, you know, lived in England in the 80s, then went to work in 1989 for a brewmaster from Yorkshire. You know, so it was kind of natural that we were involved internationally from, you know, from the beginning, because it's kind of where we were coming from in the first place, learning what we were learning, and then getting out there traveling as a brewer and beer writer. So it you know, it seemed like a natural thing to do, and really most of the collaborations that we had grew out of friendships that I made first at the Great American Beer Festival, and then later in other places. And it seemed like just a natural evolution of what we were doing, starting in 1997 with our first collaboration with Brakes Beer. But then by 2002, 2003, we'd done, you know, about a dozen. So it was very, very early on. You know, I'm told that we were the first American brewery to do collaborations at all.
I absolutely love that idea, too, of this being the manifestation of some great friendships that are made, because the whole beer industry, the community around it, is all about this camaraderie, at least from what I've seen and the part that I love most about it. And so the idea of you know, making up a striking up a friendship, obviously striking up some talk about the business and creative ideas, and then actually making it manifest, having it manifest into a product, is fantastic.
Well, the best known of our collaborations is the one with Hans Peter Drexler from Schneider.
So good.
And we had been friends for 10 years before that, and his family and my family actually go on vacation together in Italy. I saw him a few weeks ago. We were in Italy. My brother teaches his kids how to play guitar. I mean, so it's really, you know, I like the collaborations where things are really tight, and it's not just a business thing.
So how do I know you're a natural host, and I many times I'm at Brooklyn Brewery, and I'll see you with guests from other countries, whether they're Italian brewers or the malt guy from Germany. Where do you feel more comfortable? Do you feel more comfortable going to other breweries? And what's that like for you?
Oh, I'm happy either way. I think the thing that's most important is that whatever it is, that it's real, you know, and we're feeling it. You know, I don't want something where it was like, you know, this would be a great marketing idea. You know, that doesn't really interest me very much. If there's not going to be a two-way flow of the creative process, then, you know, you're doing it just to do it, you know, and to stick your names on it. And that's why we're also doing things with wineries and with coffee roasters and with filmmakers and with other people who, you know, are coming from a creative background that we're excited about.
Forgive me if I made it sound that it was businesslike, because that's exactly not what I was thinking at all.
Oh, no, no, I think it really is
about people. And so much of this product, you know, sure, there is money behind it. There are people out there who are trying to make money, and that seems to be their objective, which I don't agree with either. And I just love when the human beings, all the creativity can come together, and it can be manifested in a way that the rest of us can feel it.
Well, let's ask, Brian, you've started in a totally different model than most brewers. You're pretty much working in other people's breweries, or you're collaborating all the time. Tell us a little bit about how you work and the mystique of
and how that came about.
Brian Stromke.
I guess, I mean, collaboration is the essence of everything that Stillwater is kind of made up of. I just started out as a self-taught backyard home brewer, and when I met Brian Ewing from 12% Imports, we just kind of, it was like Garrett said, it's like we kind of built a friendship and recognized one another's talents and figured out a way to combine them and to create something that would benefit the two of us. So from there, it's like now when I'm using the host brewery, whether it's a collaboration or whether it's a dictation of my own original recipe just for the Stillwater line, it's it's always a collaboration.
So how do you feel? You're going to different breweries. Do you feel like you're stodging in those breweries? Do you feel like you're actually going in on equal terms
I actually want Brian to mention how he got into this too, and his nomadic background and how it kind of led from, I mean, you were a DJ.
Yeah. So I used to tour. So what came about is one day I was trying to figure out how to balance and integrate the my new brewing obsession with my wanderlust and desire to travel and to experience new people and places. So that's kind of how.
So
I was
instead of tying yourself to a brewery, which would put you in Baltimore, in your case, was your home, then you had this nomadic instinct that made this kind of brewing sort of natural for you too.
Yeah, I'm used to kind of working on the run, and the way what I took from it is like looking at the brewery as a studio, because I was using studios all over the world to do remixes and original production. So when that's just a bunch of, you know, gadgets and synthesizers, the brewery is stainless steel and equipment as well.
Bunch of gadgets.
Yeah. And the host brewer and the assistant brewer's work is like producer engineer and kind of helped me. I'm more of a designer than I am like the hand, like a day-to-day brewer,
right? Because they know the systems.
So what are you thinking about when you come in, though? Tell us a little more. Like you know this is kind of a new thing that what you're doing. Tell us that you pick a brewery that you work in a lot. Let's say in Belgium. Do you work in a brewery in Belgium?
Yeah, multiple.
Okay, pick one and talk us through, just on your own, talk us through what it's like when you met these guys, how you work with them, and just give
how
it
you
time.
Design the beer, and
we
how
want
it's
to hear
executed.
About what you have to say.
It's a long-winded, like, hard to answer question, because every situation is different. Like when I brewed with Urbain from Strois in Belgium at Deca, the brewery is 100 years old. They don't even use caustic or sanitizer. They clean the whole thing with boiling water, and it's insane. So there's that, and then there's, you know, like a, you know, I'll be doing a beer at Stone in about a month, and that's probably one of the biggest batches I've ever approached. So it's a completely different animal.
Let's say it's Destruz, because that's a cool place. Like, I'm trying to get what you're really about. You strike up a relationship with these guys, and they invite you in, and just tell it, because there's a lot of homebrewers out there, people who would love to do what you're doing. Just tell us really, like, you know, step by step, how does this happen?
The only really way I can answer this is when I was homebrewing, I was able to make really good beer on the worst equipment possible. So I approach like any professional brewery as a step above what I started with. So I'm used to working with the worst of the worst, and now I'm learning to work with, you know, some of the best equipment out there as well. And it's just more.
But I think, may I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that you are a nomadic brewer who is brewing, you know, brewing on all with your friends on different systems. But a lot of what you do is not really a collaboration, right? Do you, you come up with your recipe? You've obviously struck up a relationship with the establishment, with the people involved in it, to come in and be able to execute, you know, these beers on their systems. But a lot of them really are your brainchild and not you having to like collaborate on a recipe. And then sometimes you do collaborate, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, what is the collaboration process like? You go in there and you obviously know what they do and what they do well. You know what you do. I mean, how do the minds come together?
Exactly. It's just, it can start with anything. It starts with an idea, a conversation. I mean, when I design beers, I don't make anything to that really fits a definitive style. It's kind of a conceptual, it's an artistic process for me. Hence why I moved from music into brewing. So I'm basically, I don't know, I let things happen organically. Like yeah. when I meet somebody, people ask me like, yeah, how do you choose who you collaborate with or work with? And it just happens.
And that sounds like what Garrett was saying too. I mean, he's not seeking out, I mean, obviously he seeks out some of these breweries enough, you know, to like drink their beer, but that doesn't mean he's going to strike up enough of a friendship that he's going to meet minds and make a beer, right?
Well, I think, you know, for us, and then I'm sure it's the same for Brian, you get approached by a lot of people wanting to do things, and you can't do everything, you know, and you really have to come down, you know, in your own heart into, like, well, what would be interesting, what's fun, and what's real?
Who do you want to work with?
Yeah, what's real is the... is really the connection, and increasingly, you know, I look for that, and that's the thing that really most interests me. Sometimes it's something where we get to do something amazing, like, you know, last year we sent the entire brewing team over to Sweden, and we barreled the 175th anniversary of Carnegie Porter. And, you know, putting our whole brewing team on a plane and going over there, shipping over 150 bourbon barrels, you know, and spending a full day with the Swedish Porter Drinkers Association, barreling these 150 barrels was just an amazing...
It's an experience.
It's an experience. It was an amazing day. But at the same time, I'm sure that the fun thing also is the challenge of going to somebody else's brewery and pulling off a vision. And when we did Hopfenweisse, for example... We had to invent entire new ways of doing everything because they had no facility to actually
handle
do things.
Handle the dry hopping?
Yeah, yeah. That, well, not only that, they'd never done dry hopping. I mean, I'll give you an example. When you dry hop, normally you're going to add hops to beer that's already been fermented. It's in a unitank or something of that sort. Or you're going to move it from something into a tank. You have to get all the oxygen out of there first, so you don't oxidize the beer.
I didn't know that.
So, and that's the thing that will most destroy your hop aroma. And so I said to Hans Peter, okay, well, our procedure is we're going to take the beer, and once it's finished with its fermentation, we're going to put the hops into this tank, and we're going to fill the tank with CO2 to get rid of the oxygen, and then we're going to move the beer over. And he said, CO2? We don't have any CO2 at this brewery. Schneider is so traditional that they have open fermenters and a centrifuge and straight into the bottle. You know, they just say, like, basically they have half a brewery. So even from a point of view of 100 or 150 years ago, they're way back in the past in some ways beyond that.
And for the volume they do and everything else, we think that they've turned into something else and they haven't.
Yeah, there's no ability for storage at all. So we then have to use a completely different tank and came up with a technique to transfer the beer onto the hops before the fermentation was finished so that the finishing fermentation would force the oxygen out.
Oh.
And every stage of the production of this beer had a challenge like that. And so it was not only
good
fun,
for the brewer's
but,
brain.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to take a short break.
And
we'll be back
great.
In a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You know you make me want to shout. Look, my hands jumping. Look, my heart's bumping. Throw my head back. Come on now. Don't forget to say you will. Yeah, don't forget to shout. Yeah, 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 yeah. Say you will. Throw your head back, baby. Say you will. Come on, come on. Say you will. Throw your head back. Ooh. Come on now. Say that you love me. Say that you need me. Say that you want me. You're gonna be me. Come on now. Come on now. Come on now. I still remember.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're at Roberta's in Bushwick, and we love the Heritage Radio Network. So we got a great studio here tonight, Jen Swartman, Blind Tiger, Olivia and Dave from Empire, Brian Strumpke from Stillwater, and Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery. Dave Kataleski is the president of the New York State Brewers Association. So in addition to owning Empire in Syracuse, he has a role in working on the future of small breweries in New York State. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jimmy.
You know, you've had a lot going on the past couple of months. You got some recognition from Senator Schumer. You guys did a campaign. I Love New York Beer.
Well, we're still working on that right now. We're working with the I Love New York folks to determine whether or not we can use that in the campaign. And I think it's going to be a version of it, somewhat of a version. But, you know, Chuck went down to a package store down in Long Island and saw that there weren't very many New York State beers that were represented and called me and said, you know, what can we do to make New York State beers more prominent in New York State? You know, oddly enough, according to the State Liquor Authority, there's 124 production breweries in New York State. I lost track at about 100. So there's still 24 out there. Now, a lot of these are the new nano breweries that are brewing in very small batches. But suffice it to say, you know, the opportunity for New York State beers is great right now. You know, when I started the New York State Brewers Association 8 years ago, there were less than 40 breweries. And now, like I said, there's, you know, three times that. So, you know, I think the potential for continued growth is there. And, you know, as long as New York State is focused on local, and they certainly are, I think New York State beer is going to continue to thrive. And as long as we continue making great award-winning beers that we are, the future is bright for New York State beers.
Garrett, do you ever talk about these things, or is it more the area of your partner, Steve Hindy?
Well, Steve has been a leader in this area, you know, along with Dave for a long time going back. So, you know, I often joke that I'm just a liquid. But I'm glad that we have a brewer who can refer to our senior senator as Chuck, and you know that's a really important thing because you discover that. That the political end of things is going to affect you whether you like it or not. I don't personally have an appetite for that world, so it's good for us that that we have Steve to go and do that. But I think that people are increasingly looking at local brewers as drivers of economy and drivers of culture, you know, and...
And it's a growing industry.
I really can't think of anything. If you were to take New York State as a whole, rather than just New York City, and look at, well, you know, what makes New York New York as a state, you know, I think that brewing has as good a chance of doing that in the future, you know, as anything else. You know, I don't think that there's a, and in fact, there's an upcoming exhibition at the New York Historical Society,
oh,
which I think
on
everybody.
Right now.
Yeah, it's a so you know ongoing, really covering the you know, not only New York City's brewing heritage, but New York State's brewing heritage, which is glorious. And look at the return now of our hop industry, which is going to be a big story in the next few years.
Great, Dave. There was some controversy the last couple of months. We stayed out of it, but I think now we should talk about it. What was going on with the excise tax or this extra tax on kegs or something?
Well, you know, it's somehow we initially started in 2003 in New York State Brewers Association as an organization that markets and promotes. What we saw is that New York State craft beer and New York State beer in general had a 3% market share. And the 40 breweries that were fighting for the same, you know, 3% market share pie, you know, I thought that kind of was small when you look at states like Oregon that has a 30% market share and Colorado with a 20% market share, Vermont with an 18%. And instead of fighting up to the same size of the pie, we said, you know, let's get together and work together and do some festivals and educate the New York drinking public as to what craft beer is, and it will increase the size of the pie. And the goal was to get to 10% in 2010. We didn't achieve our goal, but we were darn close. So I guess I could say damn, right? So we were damn close.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Is that okay, Jen?
Oh, it's fine with me. You can say damn. I think that's great that it grew that much.
So,
Garrett, you've never sworn on air, have you?
Not yet, but, you know.
Should we start? It
depends on where this conversation goes.
Yeah.
You can swear, but you can't.
Exactly.
I bet you I can get him to swear.
You start talking about, you know, the Shelton lawsuit.
You don't know what's going to happen. Yeah.
So, and to get back to point, and the point is that, you know, all of a sudden we realized that we're getting a greater market share and increasing the amount of breweries that we had in New York State. So what happens is we become a political watchdog. And then we become, you know, knee deep in politics when something like a Shelton lawsuit occurs. And that's where it was deemed by the state of New York, both the New York State Department of Tax and Finance and the New York State Liquor Authority, that both the excise tax exemption that we've had for some 20 years and the brand label registration fee exemption, which we've had for, I think, 12 years, were deemed unconstitutional. And it was settled out of court based on this lawsuit, which, you know, when that happens, we have no opportunity for recourse. We can't. We can't go back and say, you know, we'd like the, you know, we think this is wrong, and we would like to counter that.
Why was it settled out of court then?
It was settled out of court because it frankly it was unconstitutional, and okay. And it fell against the Granholm Act, and which was an act that I don't want to bore you with the wine side of things, but it was about wine, and it fell in the face of beer, and it was recognized, and it was it was settled, and immediately. New York State breweries had to pay for both excise tax and brand label registration fees. Now, on the excise tax piece, you know, we recognized in, you know, in the case of like a Brooklyn brewery, this would mean $500,000 in state and city taxes. Guys like Genesee, $866,000. Empire Brewing Company, some $30,000, but there are others in New York State that are paying over $100,000, and that simply wasn't in the budget.
And when you're talking about, you know, small businesses, I think that to put that in context for us, at Brooklyn Brewery, you were looking at more than $9,000 per employee, $9,000 per employee of the brewery.
Wow.
Of new taxes.
No, yep. That's crazy.
You know, per year.
Per year.
Yeah,
right.
That's what we're saying, too.
Right.
I mean, this is like every year.
Let's rewind this. And okay. It's time to talk about this, because I know how this started.
I'm glad
I remember.
We're talking about it.
It was 2006. And the Shelton Brothers had these like fun Christmas labels. It was Santa's butt.
Exactly.
There are images of Santa with a butt.
Yep.
And I know that the New York State did not approve those labels.
Correct.
And I can understand, okay.
That's where it all started.
But
picture
what
of
I'm saying
butt.
Is, I remember that they fought that. And they thought, well, this is ridiculous. We should have our labels approved. And that made sense. And eventually, I know as a retailer, I got those bottles and I sold them. And I thought they were cute and fun. And the beer was really good. So I didn't really think there was a deeper issue there. Now, I just find out, you know, it's 6 years later in 2012. Somehow, they turned their fight against labels into this huge fight against New York State. And I was like, how did they keep that up for 6 years?
Well, what they were fighting were the brand label registration fees. And
$150?
I thought they were just trying to,
which is
to fight the
label.
Fact that they could put Santa's butt on a label.
Well, no, it wasn't that. It was more like, then it became more, how much does it cost to register every single label? Because it's not just getting a brewery approved to, like, you know, sell in the state. It
I understand
is every
that part,
single label.
I want Dave to tell me because I'm saying it's a funny
I'm
story.
I'm sorry. It's just like, it does come down to like the money.
It's a funny story because it started out, you couldn't show Santa's butt on your label. And I'm like, okay, I can see they might want to fight to have artistic freedom. Well, but to turn that into a whole fight against New York State, you know, was.
To tell the truth, the whole excise tax part was recreational. You know, it was, I have that direct from the source, you know, it was kind of done for, you know, for fun, you know, and that was not the purpose of the lawsuit. And that was put in there kind of as a, you know, as an amusing sidebar. You know, the problem is that when you're dealing with these forces, you know, there are all kinds of unforeseen consequences. And, you know, you have to be cognizant of them. You know, I think that hopefully in the future, the craft brewing community are going to look at everyone's situation. I mean, every state has something, hopefully, in place that helps boost their local brewers. If you look at Pennsylvania, for example, you could say, well, look, they have to buy beer by the case. And, you know, they like it that way. And it's difficult. But it would never occur to breweries from New York State to go to Pennsylvania and say something to them about, you know, how they're going to carry out their thing. You know, we go sell beer there and we sell it under the laws
and
of Pennsylvania.
And they should be supporting their Pennsylvania brewers
exactly.
above and beyond.
I think they absolutely should be.
Yeah,
and you know what? It's when you are competing in Pennsylvania, the Philly kind of thing is like, are you from Philly? You know, well, if you're not from Philly, they give you that little look. And you know
but
what?
Okay.
You know, it's tough, but I totally respect it. It's actually really cool how Philly centric Philly is, and how Pennsylvania.
It would be great if
are.
New York City was even more so.
Yeah,
but you know, like then they are,
and they're getting there,
and that's a nice thing because
well,
we're also getting greater and greater products
from
our local brewers, which helps.
It's about educating the public. I mean, we have the largest beer drinking market in the world. And this is a great, you know, a great opportunity for local brewers to really expand on that. It's a huge opportunity, and I think as we continue to grow, so let's back up for a second because I think the end result of the brand label registration fees was fantastic. What had occurred is that the state decided to make them exempt for every small brewer. Period, inside the state and outside the state. So the Shelton brothers are going to benefit by it. So good for Dan. He wins in terms of brand label registration.
Oh, that's okay. Because this is what they finally. I'm sorry. I heard that the Sheltons won, and then I heard that it was overturned. So this is now the final result?
There was no win out of this.
Okay.
The state,
that's why I'm
the
glad
state
we're
settled.
Talking.
The state settled. Gave the Shelton Brothers bag of money, and then what we in turn did was went and met with our legislators, and it was unbelievable. It was a team of Steve Hinney, myself, Robin Ottaway was somewhat involved. He was actually a lot involved. John Henderson from Genesee, a bunch of lobbyists, a bunch of attorneys, and we all got together and we lobbied in Albany. We met with 14 legislators. We had bipartisan support. And we came up with two pieces for this particular legislation. One was to basically get rid of the brand label registration altogether for production, for labels produce less than 1,500 barrels. And the other piece was a beer production tax credit for breweries in New York State. And it's kind of like a scale, but the whole purpose behind this legislation was to make sure that it was fiscally neutral, if you would, so that the state taxpayers wouldn't have to pay any money and the brewers would end up making out. The formula was slightly convoluted. The state ended up being neutral. Some of the brewers benefited, some didn't benefit as much, but the bottom line is everybody agreed to it.
And so that's why you have guys like Brian making beer at other breweries around the world.
Well, it's also why we need people like Dave, you know, out there doing this, because the you know, a lot of the brewers who are kind of just working every day on their beers don't have either the time or the expertise
or the money,
to carry out that work. And you know, frankly, our work, what we do, is protected by guys like Dave. And like Steve Hindy and like others.
Cheers going, to Dave, you know, and Steve
going
Hindy.
Out there and getting this job.
And Dave, wait one sec, because it's just one thing. What beer did you bring tonight? Because you actually make beer too.
Live and Let Rye. Yeah, we entered the market about 2 years ago with our beer. I started the Empire Brewing Company in 1994. And Olivia Cirios, our assistant brewer, sitting to my right, and this was named after her. It's a rye beer that we make.
Let's taste it one more time.
Sure.
So we're gonna taste this beer. What is it again? It's Empire what, Dave?
This is Empire Rye IPA called Live and Let Rye.
Rye IPA. And we're going to take a short break here on Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be back in a few minutes.
All right. Cheers.
I'm going to Chicago. That's the last place my baby stayed. Sign on the highway red. Hitchhike. I'm gonna keep moving till I get to that street called a Zig Zag. Hitchhike.
Yeah. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Did you know it's July Good Beer Month in New York City? For the fourth year, Mayor Bloomberg will declare July is Good Beer Month in New York City, thanks to the efforts of the Good Beer Seal. Check out goodbeerseal.com, learn about special events. And coming up this weekend, Cookout NYC on Governor's Island. All right, so we're talking about New York and beer laws. Dave Kowalewski from Empire, why don't you wrap it up for us?
Okay, so the bottom line is we fought for five major pieces of legislation this year, and each piece made it through the Assembly and the Senate and are awaiting the governor's signature. There's a farm brewers bill that's going to allow for beer to finally be recognized as an agricultural product in New York State. It's going to encourage hop growers. It's going to encourage barley growers. It's going to create actual beer trails through small farm breweries throughout New York State. In 76, when farm bill was passed, there were 40 wineries, and now there's over 350. We think the same thing's going to happen on the beer side, and that's going to raise the level of knowledge for craft beer for a lot of non-craft beer drinkers. So that's great. The other piece is the brand label registration and the excise tax. The other piece is a franchise bill, which we've been fighting for 8 years, and that'll allow small brewers out of onerous wholesale agreements.
Brewers or just New York?
That's all small brewers.
That's
yes,
it's a big deal.
It's a big deal, and the United States brewing industry is looking at this piece of legislation. This is it's fair, it makes sense, and it should be signed into law.
Dave, you're from upstate, and I know that you know, being involved with state agriculture and all these other issues. There's a difference between upstate economy and New York City economy. And for upstate, these value-added agricultural businesses like hard cider, beer, small distilleries really can make a difference for upstate New York for growing in terms of the economies.
Well, I mean, the number one business in New York State, believe it or not, is farming. And so what we're looking for is staple products for farmers to grow. And then we're seeing it in hops right now. But I think the real key ingredient is, as all the brewers that are sitting here know, is barley. I mean, somehow we have to bring back the barley industry or create a barley industry in New York State. And that has to do with malting and growing the proper type of barley. So that's going to happen, too.
And it's you have a farm now, don't you?
I do, yes. Yeah, we grow all of our own ingredients for we grow all of our own vegetables. We actually invest in 60 different farms in upstate New York. We own our own cattle and lamb, and we grow our own vegetables, and we do all that for the brew pub in Syracuse.
So one thing. So I know that rye is suited to growing in the Northeast, but there's issues with rye. Garrett, can you make
100%? No, but what 100%? About barley?
Well, we're talking about rye because rye is a really good Northeast ingredient that grows well here.
Well, there are a number of things that grow well here. Wheat grows well here, and last summer we used, we made a beer that had mostly New York State ingredients for the Highline, and that was, local raw wheat and honey. Rye grows well here, and barley can grow well here. Barley, generally speaking, is going to end up being malted, and you can grow the barley, but it's the malting piece that's really tougher for the brewers. For using rye, you can use it in various ways. It does have difficulties in that it's very high in protein and glutens, etc., that are going to gum up your mash and make that difficult. But you get a lot of nice flavors out of it. Distillers are interested. Brewers are interested. One thing you'll find is that any New York State grain or hops that are produced, there are no lack of customers for any of this stuff. In fact, there's not nearly enough for any of us to use. And I think that one of the great opportunities here is, as Dave just said, farming being the number one thing in New York State. Well, when people talk about craft beer, that's not generally what they talk about. Craft brewers speak a language in most cases that is alien to most people. we come out of a scientific background and we talk about IBUs and OGs and finishing gravities and all this stuff, where the wine people have been very smart to never, ever, ever mention anything technical. They don't talk about they know what their acidity level is. They know how much tannin they have, and they have these numbers in their head, but they would never ever speak them in public because it puts people off, and they know that.
What's funny is that something wine that
we have not learned to talk about sunshine and rolling
What's
hillsides the way
though,
they
is
have.
How wine is notoriously lofty in its perception among the public, as opposed to beer being the people's drink. And yet the winemakers actually have been speaking to the people and the brewers. Yeah.
Well, the wine is also cornered the market on the international style of the 13% bottle of wine. Well, so there's much less variety and locality in wine than there is in beer.
And you have spectacular levels of manipulation for the vast majority of wines made, whereas most of what we're doing, anybody could recognize that of the 1800s. The basic thing here is, here we have an opportunity to reconnect beer to the land in the mind of the public. And things that have always been true, will then simply be apparent to everybody else. What we know, that beer is grown and essentially and does not come out of just a factory made by machines.
We're building a new brewery in upstate New York, about 22 acres, and we're in the process of creating hopefully the first farm brewery in New York State. And in that process, it's going to be, we have 3 acres or 4 acres dedicated to hops. There will be barley on site and some of the other ingredients that we put in our beer, because we really have to, I think, educate the public that it's a little bit beyond the yellow fizzy beer. I think it's much more than a craft, and they have to understand how beer is made, especially throughout New York State.
Wait a minute. I happen to have some yellow fizzy beer right here.
Tell us about this. So now,
I noticed that.
It's
besides
really good
politics, wait, Garrett, you also make beer, right? So this is an excellent
summer. He's not even the
beer.
Politician. Yeah, he's the liquid.
Yeah, I'm the liquid.
What is this? This is the Brooklyn Gold Standard. Tell us about this beer.
This is a beer called
Gold. It's so good.
This is a beer called Gold Standard, and it's based on Keller beers out of Germany. I mean, when I first went to Germany, the thing that really amazed me was the really fresh lager character of the Helles beers that you would get, especially the unfiltered ones that you could get out in beer gardens. Mm-hmm. And even though certainly many American breweries produce a Pilsner or something like it, they don't taste anything like what you get over there. There is what I refer to as a fermentation room character that comes through, you know, in the German versions. So here we borrowed a yeast from our good friends at the New Glarus Brewery in Wisconsin, a German yeast that is special to them, and they, you know, they know,
And that was very generous.
And it was very generous of Dan to lend us this yeast. We use 100% floor malts, which are made in Germany, and then together with this yeast, want to make kind of an export expression. So 6.5%. About 50 IBUs, so a very hoppy, sharp, but distinctly lagery lager. You could never mistake this for an ale. It is it's very malt driven at the same time as being hop driven, and I think very refreshing.
You know, interestingly enough, knowing that this is a New Glarus strain, you know, their yeast, I would almost call this a collaboration.
I'm not sure that Dan would call it a collaboration, so I'm not going to go there.
We won't
go there,
that far. Sorry, Dan. But
no,
just
no,
to think,
I'd
like,
be happy to collaborate with Dan anytime.
A long-distance collaboration, since he doesn't leave Wisconsin much, I guess.
No, it's true. But, you know, he's one of the best brewers in the country. And, you know, I mean, you know, obviously we have a highly cooperative industry here. And I think one of the things that makes us, you know, all-powerful is that, frankly, you know, when you're in trouble or you need something, some guy who may very well be your closest competitor is the guy who's most likely to be there to help you out. And I don't think there are many other industries in the United States where that would be considered true.
And I think he'd approve of this beer. I really do.
I'm told that he, you know, he told me that I sent him a keg and he told me he loves it.
Okay. Garrett. I don't think he'd lie either.
And one more thing.
No, he wouldn't.
when Dave Kowalski talks to Chuck Schumer or Steve Hindy is talking to the world, what's the future of New York beer? Is export the future? Because I've heard that the exports or craft beer
associations. We've got to take over New York first. Come on.
I'm with Jen. I think first things first, we have to increase our market share in New York State. I think exporting is a great thing. It's the future of small brewers in New York State. Certainly, Brooklyn knows that firsthand. They're experiencing great growth all over the world. But, you know, I think a lot of other small breweries in New York State have that prospect. You know, you go to China and people are wearing I Love New York t-shirts all over the place, and I think we have to capitalize on that. You know, I think Korea is also a really good market for the future of New York State beer. What do you think?
You know, our export, you know, has grown directly out of travels that we had. And, you know, what I've seen... We're in 17 countries. And what I've seen overseas is, you know, an attempt to brand American beer under one raft, which I don't think necessarily does anybody any good. You know, the great thing is that wherever you go in the world, doesn't matter where, you go from Japan to Brazil, the story of beer in the world is American craft brewing, period. No, I'm not saying that we are the greatest brewing nation or that other people don't make wonderful beers, but everybody's making beers in the new American style. So it's I think export is a possibility, but you have to actually be on the ground to do it.
Let's bring it back. Brian Strumke, one of the new hot, you know, hip brewers. I was going to call you the DJ brewer. It's like Brian's the DJ brewer because he was a DJ.
It's been a while.
And it's a different model, but it shows you what you can do. But, okay, I want you to – I'm giving this chance one more time because and you're awesome. But you're going to go to Stone Brewery and you're going to make a beer. Just tell us – give us a little insight as to how that happened. You got like 2 minutes. So come on.
It's a menage a trois. I guess of myself.
All of the ones that Stone does are like three breweries.
It's myself and good friend Yepa, evil twin, and Stone. we were just hashing out the recipe today, and it came about like wanted to emphasize the strong points of the three different breweries or brewers, I guess, because two of us don't have breweries. So it's a black smoked wheat saison. It's fairly hoppy. It's going to be a cool mix of like a Chinook, East Kent Golding, and Cluster. I got this fascination recently after making Premium, which is like my reconstruction of PBR. It's a 4.5% beer. It's 20% corn, 20% rice.
Where did you do that one?
A place called Westbrook down in South Carolina. And it's just, I wanted to show people that everybody kind of thinks that when we talk about the fizzy yellow beer, it's like, oh, beer sucks because it has, you know, craft or macro brew sucks because it has corn and rice. So I wanted to debunk that. So I just said, if you use some different elements and a different approach, I think you can make a really tasty beverage. So I fermented it with a saison yeast and two different strains of Brettanomyces that a friend of mine cultured. And then hopped it with like very old school American hops, like Nugget, it's Cluster Northern Brewer and some Saaz, which is not really American, but
sweet, man. Brian, I love you, man, and I love your beer so much. You've done something new in Baltimore. Tell us about your brew pub. Is it a brew pub or a restaurant, or what is it?
It's yet again another collaboration. It was a local chef in Baltimore, has a really innovative restaurant called Jack's Bistro. We collaborated on a couple beer dinners. It was my local restaurant go-to. And then one day, he's like, hey, I want to do another place. I'd like it to be beer-focused. You know, you interested? So I thought it was a really good way. Because he's got a really interesting approach to food, and he's a very international dude. He travels a lot. So to sum it up, it's like the slogan for the restaurant, it's duck tongues, pig ears, and fancy beers.
You're picking them. So what's on your beer list right now? And it's called Stillwater Bar?
What's it called? Yeah. Oh, it's called Of Love and Regret.
It's not called Stillwater.
Nah, it's named after one of my beers.
Dude.
Nah, I'm not just him.
It's a collaboration.
I'm not a very direct marketer.
I was going to go to Baltimore and ask for the Stillwater.
He's an indirect
Pub.
Marketer, and it is still named after one of his beers. And if you're a fan of Stillwater, you know Of Love and Regret.
Yeah, it's kind of, I like people to dig in a little bit. I don't want to just throw it in their face. So it's like, I want them to come in just because it looks like a cool place, and then they'll figure out that it's my place.
So what are some of the beers that you have on draft tonight?
At least 10 of them are mine. We have 20 beers on draft. So about 10 are mine. Collaborations from around the world and my staples that I brew. I brew a lot in Maryland at a brewery called Dog Brewery. And and we do two wines on draft. And I do a cold brew iced coffee. I love cold brew iced coffee. I said if I ever open a bar, I want it on draft. So I took all my old homebrew
equipment.
And
you like that the most, don't you?
I love it. Yeah. It's like, I took all my
old... Do you mix coffee with beer or what?
Who's on the other taps?
The other taps, actually, right now, we got like... one of my favorites is Professor Fritz Bream, the Grodinski, the smoked
that
wheat.
Sour smoke.
So we always have like a smoked beer, like either Shankarla, I think right now that's doing the place. We keep one IPA on, because I don't make any IPAs. So last week it was Firestone Walker, the Union Jack. I just told the distributors, I said, when it comes to IPA, I just want the freshest, like the best of the freshest. Because that's the issue with IPAs.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think we have Braumeister pills. And it's just basically I picked my little dream.
So you kind of fill in the gaps around the styles that you're doing. Because you know, obviously most of what you do is like saison yeast, if not all of it. Yeah. And so, yeah, so there's a lot of still water. And then you fill in the gaps with all the
cool
other
stuff.
Exactly.
Stuff.
Yeah, but
keep everyone happy.
But I want to keep, but, good but with we food. Keep it really esoteric. And like, I basically. I don't know. I built a place. It's designed to look kind of like my house, and it's set up to be like my.
It's like around the corner from
Brian. What's the name again?
A little bit of a megalomaniac.
Brian, what's the name of your pub again?
Of Love and Regret.
Okay, I thought it was called Stillwater Pub.
No,
dude, come on, you're letting me.
It's a better name than Stillwater.
So, in Syracuse, New York, where should we go, Dave?
Empire Brewing Company.
And Gary, you know what? You don't even know all the events happening at Brooklyn Brewery, do you?
Oh, no, it's really no longer possible to know.
You know, on July 16th, there's an event called Backyard Hops, and there's a chief from Peekskill with John Siegel and Bronx Brewery and some other guys all talking about, and Ben from Beercraft, they're going to talk about how you can grow your own hops and small farmers can start growing hops.
Yeah, well, I keep hearing that you're doing this thing with NPR. Like, I hear it. It's like, but I wasn't invited, so how could I know?
Well, yeah.
No, it's what's great is that I think that what's great is that we have so many events going on that it's not possible for anybody to keep up with everything going on.
Or to get bored.
Yeah, exactly. You know, our quality control director, you know, Mary Wiles, you know, she this year she planted 6,000 hop plants in upstate New York. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, what kind of fun we can have with the stuff that she comes up with. You know, I think that, you know, the, you know, New York State next needs, you know, needs a really good malting facility that could actually make a decent amount of malt. We'd be really interested in seeing, you know, good, solidly well-made New York State malts available.
And I'm working with two malt shops right now to get a grant. The deadline is July 16th to get the CFA grant, and we're working with some malters to hopefully do just that, because that's the key, to get malt in New York.
I'm excited to know that malt can actually grow successfully here, and but the nuance is all in the malt. I mean, that makes it a lot easier than hops, honestly.
No, it's going to be it's the way to go. And you're right, you need to spend the money, have the malt facilities.
Well, you know, it's kind of odd, because a feed farmer once told me, whether or not it's accurate, I'm not sure, but I was lobbying with the Farm Bureau, and they said something like 30 million bushels of barley is grown each year in New York State, and none of it is for brewing purposes. So what we need them to do is grow 2-row, and then we need to malt it, and we'll be good to go.
I mean, one thing people don't realize about the produce that goes into beer is that it is spectacularly technical, and especially for the farmer, you know, who might grow, say, peaches. You know, you grow a decent peach, you take it off the tree, you put it in a box, you send it to the producer. Hops need to be dried, you know, properly. If they're being pelletized, they got to be pelletized properly. I mean, there are so many ways to ruin it. And the same, and the same with the malt. It has to be grown to a certain percentage of protein, et cetera, and then has to go through this whole process. So for the farmer, it's there's a tough climb to get to.
But there
the
is
point
a reward
where
there is a reward because it's a specialty market and it can be rewarded.
Yes,
if you're treating. Absolutely.
Brian, what do you have to say?
I had a thought that would kind of tie together this somewhat disjointed
go for it.
Episode. I think is that talk about dealing with all these people, and we talked about collaborations, and that's why like brewing is like an ultimate collaboration, because we have to, you know, we're working with the hop farmers, working with the malt, the farmers growing the malt, the malt houses, the yeast labs and everything.
Built for collaboration.
Brewing is such like a collaborative effort.
I have another word for that, and you know, it comes out of slow food, which is co-production.
Yes.
You know, and the idea of co-production is that when you are a chef or you are a brewer, you know, that in fact the farmer, you know, is producing along with you, and that you're not producing alone, and that you have to talk to that person, understand their business, and actually take an interest in their well-being. And, you know, that's something that increasingly we're looking at with all the relationships that we have out there, and really kind of coming to know who your farmer is and what he or she needs, and be willing to give up something in order that they can have what they need to have. And it's very important.
Brilliant. Now, Dave, introduce your brewer, Olivia.
Olivia is our assistant brewer, now moving to New York City to take over as our brand manager and selling Empire beer throughout New York.
So, Olivia, say hello.
Hey, I've already moved, so I guess I'm officially a resident.
All right. So, what's going on in New York related to Empire Beer?
We're growing a lot. We just released a new summer style. It's our white afro, so it's gaining a lot of headway. We're kind of seeing it fly off the shelves.
Explain this name to me.
White Afro. Well, White Afro is short for White Aphrodisiac. It's a Belgian-style white beer. It's made with lavender and ginger, and it's got some lemon peel.
Oh,
local
they won't
honey
approve aphrodisiac. I remember that.
I don't know.
So it's from White Afro.
Yeah. It's, you know, funny.
I love
the labeling thing, the butt.
Guys, I love this show. We're just getting rolling, but you know what?
And
we're going to give a sign off first to the Good Beer Still Bar events. We will announce the winner of our beer pairing beer recipe contest next week on our July 10th show. The winner will receive a hard-to-find copy of Lucy Saunders' book, The Best of American Beer and Food. You can send your favorite beer and food pairing recipe to beersessionsradio@gmail.com. Barrier Brewing. Welcome back, party. Barrier Brewing, one of our favorite breweries in the New York area, has been closed for 2 months, expanding from one barrel to five barrel system. Amazing, but we love their beers. Go to the Double Windsor on July 11th and Summer Sour Sampler at Browery Lane July 13th. If you're in Brooklyn, check it out. Otherwise, go to goodbeersteel.com. Learn more about the whole July Good Beer Month package. In closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks again to the Good Brew Seal. And thanks to Garrett, Dave, Brian, Jen, and Olivia for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator Brett Thompson, who's in Seattle and still does it. And thanks to Joe, our new engineer. So we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
All right. In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our programs archived on our website or by searching iTunes for Heritage Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website. Thanks for listening.